everyone. Welcome to the fourth episode of All About FPL stream and podcast for the season. A few days back, we previewed three tricky teams in Arsenal, Liverpool and United. Today, we are previewing Wolves, Southampton and Chelsea. And we have Anirudh, who's been with us for a while and he's a Chelsea correspondent. We have the FPL USA legend, Dan. He's well known for being one of the best Wolves fan in the FPL community. And Sam, I don't have to introduce Sam. He's also been around for a long time. So he's a Saints fan. So today's stream would be around these three teams. And of course, a lot of other FPL discussions in general. So welcome, guys. So how are you guys doing? Yeah.
Hello, Surya. Great to be part of this stream and hope you're doing well. Yeah.
I'm very well, thank you. Thank you for inviting me on.
Yeah.
I'm excited to be here. Yeah, excited to be here. Really can't wait for the season to get started now. Really in FPL mode now. Just delighted to be on the live stream talking about FPL again.
Yeah, likewise, guys. Likewise. Just 10 more days, 9 more days. So it's a lot more exciting as well. Yeah, so a little bit more for our viewers right now. So today's stream would be mainly on the three teams. And we have divided each team into bits wherein we talk about the style of play going into the season, what's happened in the preseason in terms of signings and as well as in terms of preseason friendlies, which players have scored. There's a lot of interest in terms of preseason that gives us gems a lot of times. We also analyze the fixtures and our each correspondent and the others will discuss around the players to target and avoid from each of these teams going into the new season. So, without further ado, so we start with Wolves. That's slightly known because of how much Wolves are in interest in FPL point of view this season, thanks to the kind pricing. So so a little bit more about our Wolves correspondent. So Dan has been supporting Wolves for more than 30 years. He's in the US now. He is also the founder of FPL USA and he does a lot of good work in Twitter. You can follow him on Twitter at FPL Black Wolf. So how excited are you, Dan, going into the new season?
Yeah. I'm very excited. I was more excited yesterday before the Jimenez news, but yeah. I'm really excited to get the season started. A little nervous with the amount of signings haven't made.
Yeah.
I'm hopeful that we're gonna have a good season.
Yeah, yes. That's pretty much self-explanatory because in terms of number of signings, as seen on the screen, it's just one new signing that's come in and Hwang Hee-chan was a lone move that made permanent. But still, the aura around Wolves is pretty good this season. What's made that difference, Dan, from towards the end of last season to now? Yeah.
I think for a long time, we've known that Bruno Lage has wanted to move to a four at the back. And last season, we played five at the back pretty much the entire season. And everyone knows how bad our XG was, how poor we were in attack. But we have to remember that we were missing Neto for most of the season. Podence only played 12 games. Morgan Gibbs-White was at Sheffield United. Jimenez had his bad head injury and he clearly wasn't the same player when he had to wear that headband. So on top of that, playing five at the back meant we didn't have any kind of creative midfielder in the centre. We just had Neves and Moutinho. So all of these factors kind of played into our poor attack, I think.
Yeah. But going into the new season with the four at the back formation, Gibbs-White is now that creative midfielder that's playing. So there's a lot more attacking prospects. So whatever I've seen on Twitter is that Wolves have always been termed as a defensive team, which is true in terms of the number of clean sheets and the number of defensive prospects we had in FPL terms last year. But that shouldn't be the case going into the new season. So Wolves shouldn't be looked into a team that's just known to be giving defensive FPL assets. There are attackers and there are a few popular ones as well at the moment who may be a little bit more improved in terms of FPL prospects due to what happened earlier in the day. So how do you see Wolves improving in terms of goal scoring prospects? Because last season's XG, the goals weren't there for Wolves. Do you think that'll be a pretty good improvement there in this year? Yeah.
I'm hoping so. It's clearly a focus of Large to improve our attack. It has to be done. So moving to this new formation is our way of doing that. Yeah. And we've really needed, like I said, that creative midfielder in front, behind the front three. And I think in Morgan Gibbs-White, we really have that player. So I'm hoping we keep him, because if we do, he's a complete game changer. Losing Jimenez is unfortunate. But when you have a fully fit Podence, a fully fit Neto, and Morgan Gibbs-White in your team, you have a much more fluid attack. Against Besiktas, we saw them constantly changing positions. We saw us play a false nine, mainly with Daniel Podence in the position. But every now and again, he would switch with Neto. And we just looked a lot more fluid. It allowed Neves and Moutinho to sit back and really control possession in the midfield. And then we were a lot more free-flowing going forward. So I'm hopeful this is going to make a big difference this season.
Yeah. So I'll just move on a little bit. Like, Sam, what do you think of Wolves this season?
I'm very interested as to how they're going to line up now, especially we've had the news on Jimenez. It does sound, from what Dan's saying, that Podence might be used in a false nine role quite regularly. And I'm interested to see how you think that might impact not only Podence's attacking potential, but also everyone's FPL darling in early season, Neto, and Morgan Gibbs-White as well. I think there might be an argument to say that if he's in the starting lineup, the way he's been playing recently, and obviously last year with Sheffield, he might also be a little bit of an outside shout for a 5.5 enabler, I think he is. Mm-hmm. I'd be really interested to hear your view on how, as FPL assets, they're going to be affected by the news this morning or this early afternoon.
I've been saying on Twitter that I don't feel like it has too much of a difference. I've seen a lot of people saying, oh, Jimenez out, that means Neto is a no-go. I've seen some people say the opposite. And with Jimenez being out, Neto is a must-have. I honestly don't think it makes too much of a difference based on how we played in the last game. We really saw all three of these players, Neto, Podence, and Gibbs-White, just changing positions, causing a lot of problems for our opposition, getting shots on goal. So I think in a back five that we played last year, Jimenez was really crucial to that attack. He was like the focal point of every single attack. In this new formation, he was not. You'll see later on when we see the preseason games, even though he played every game, he only got two goals. He was not the focal point like he was previously. So I don't think it makes too much of a difference. Having said that, we absolutely need to sign a new striker, because we cannot just rely on Podence, Neto and Gibbs-White for the whole season.
I think you need that plan B, don't you? You need something if that goes wrong with the false nine. Otherwise, you're a bit limited.
Exactly. We pretty much have to play this false nine now. It's the only option we have. We stupidly let Fabio Silva go out online, which was already weird to me, but now it's even more ridiculous that we did that.
Didn't he score a belter on debut for Anderlecht as well?
Yeah. Oh, he's a really good player. Yeah, he's a very good player. I don't understand.
I think I totally agree with Dan, because I watched the Wolves game as well on the weekend. So these three are really good in terms of being very fluid. They're still young and direct, so they have got a lot of pace that trouble most of the Besiktas backline, because they were slow, a bit less agile, which wouldn't be the case in a Premier League defense. But still, these three are very fast, direct players in a false nine. When they constantly keep changing, it's going to cause a lot of problem for the Premier League defense. Yeah, but as having said that, like, I totally agree with Sam. With a plan B is definitely needed, because you keep going with a false nine, teams will generally plan for it, and that means you have to have a plan B to go forward. Yeah. So
what I've been saying to people is these assets are only 5.5 million. They're essentially enablers. So we shouldn't have too much expectations on them. They're enabling the rest of your team. I think for 5.5 million, they're still great assets regardless, especially with the fixtures that we have in the first six.
So I think Nate was talked too much that it went to a level of him. People started demanding an output from a premium defender, from a 5.5 premium midfielder to a 5.5 midfielder. So yeah, he should do the job of being very good at that particular price point, but we have to be a little bit more acceptable in terms of what you want out of a 5.5.
Exactly.
Yeah.
The fact is, we're comparing him to the likes of Wiesa and Leon Bailey. These are the players we need to compare him to. We shouldn't be comparing him to, I know, Madison, Saka, all of the 8 million players.
So. Yeah, they are 8 million for a reason.
Exactly.
These players are 5.5 for a reason. And him being nailed in itself is a very big advantage, which people are missing the fact, because the other guys, Bailey, he's not nailed. He doesn't find the players in Gerrard's preferred formation. Only if one of they switch to a three in front instead of going with Ings and Watkins, Bailey can find a place there. The same with Wissa, they've signed signed Lewis Potter from the Championship. He's touted to be the next Bowen coming from Hull City. So he's got a goal in preseason as well. So you have a guaranteed starter, and people sometimes get too greedy, I think. So yeah. Anil, your thoughts on Neto as a FPL asset?
So I think the high expectations of Neto comes from what he did pre-injury. So he was one of the best players in the league, in fact, if we remember. So when he came back last season, he wasn't at his best. And however, when people saw him performing the way he has done in the preseason, I think we've all got excited and we ended up having expectations probably too higher than what his price demands. But he has the potential to meet the expectations for sure. But one thing did put me off, having seen Jimenez get injured. Being a Chelsea fan, I can advocate for what can happen if you play a false nine. So it all looks nice when people rotate here and there. But when it comes to putting the ball in the back of the net, somehow nobody seems to find a way to do it. So that might be the tricky part. But apart from that, prior to today's news, I was very excited about Neto's prospects. In fact, I was very keen to bring him in my team as well.
Yeah. I think that pretty much sums up. But still, the overall conclusion that we can drive from here is that at 5.5 is still a very, very solid asset, regardless of what's happened with the injury news today morning. So I'll move on to see, to ask Dan a little bit more of how you see Wolves setting up going into the season, considering a new striker comes in or not. So what's your thoughts on how you will line up against Leeds? Yeah.
Yeah. If we don't make any signings and if Hwang continues to be out, I mean, he's close to coming back from injury, but either way, he hasn't played these preseason games. So I think he would start on the bench. So I would expect us to go with a similar lineup to what we did against Besiktas. And we'll see more on Saturday when we play Sporting Lisbon. I think that'll give us the best idea.
Yeah.
But I think we'll go for a back four. It's either going to be Sar or Sarkic in goal, depending on if Sar is back from injury. He's expected to be, but if not, then we have a 4 million goalkeeper that would be in net, which is something to keep an eye on. The wing backs are pretty much guaranteed to be Johnny and Aitnery. They have no competition right now. They're both very good players, and until Semedo comes back, I don't see them being dropped. Unless he randomly puts someone like Kilman on the left, but I don't see that happening in a on Saturday, on the 6th. And then the two positions I'm really not sure about are the two centre-back positions. We brought in Nathan Collins to shore up our defence, and because he's so used to playing in the back four. So you would think that he will start alongside Kilman or Cody. Yeah. But these two positions, I'm really not sure. I don't know what our first choice centre-backs are at this point. But if I had to guess, it would be Collins and Kilman or Cody. I don't think Cody is a 100% guaranteed starter anymore in a back four. I really don't.
At 5 million this season as well, isn't he? He's got a little price hike. Yeah.
That's why in my article I have Cody as a no-go. At 5 million, it's not worth it. And I also don't think he's 100% guaranteed in a back four.
Yeah.
Do you see Wolves as a defensive unit now that you're looking to move to a back four? Do you think you'll be as solid as you were last season, or do you foresee a little bit of that defensive rigidity or solidity being lost now?
Yeah, it's difficult to say because we've played very poor opposition in pre-season. No one's really challenged us at the back. Collins looks like a very, very good centre back from what I've seen. He's a rock at the back, especially if he lines up alongside Kilman. But we have not been tested against a Premier League opposition yet. I do think it might weaken us a bit at the back. I was also concerned that Aitnery and Johnny wouldn't be as attacking, but in preseason it looks like they still are bombing forward. Yeah. So I still think at 4.5 million, those two are good assets as enablers. But I would completely avoid our centre backs, and I would avoid Jose Sarr.
Yeah. And I also read about Dendonker taking a lot of shooting practice going into the new season. What change you would see around his playing cushion this season? Yeah, what triggered that move in terms of taking extra practice shooting?
Yeah. So as I said, last season we were clearly missing an attacking midfielder to sit in front of Moutinho and Neves, and Dendonker has always had the ability to do that, even though it's not his first position. And then I noticed a few weeks ago that I watch a lot of the training videos on YouTube, and I saw Dendonker. He was in the attacking drills with Neto, Podence, Gibbs White, and Jimenez, which gave me the idea that we're probably trying to convert him to that attacking midfielder. And then, of course, in the last few games, they actually started him in that attacking midfield role. So I think against Leeds, if Hwang is not back, now Jimenez is out, I think we might see Dendonker sitting in front of Moutinho and Neves, because he does have the ability to score goals. He's got a good shot on him. In training, he bangs the goal in all the time. So
He used to be a poker legend a few years back, and he's banged a few here and there. So all FPL managers would know that. So it should be really interesting to see that.
They've priced him at 5 million, and he's also probably the first player that will drop out. So he's an avoid for me, but he at least adds to Wolves' attack, I think. He allows the front three to be more fluent.
I know I've read that you wrote it's a 50-50 coin flip between Aitnori and Johnny start the season with. I've seen that Semedo might be back in 3 or 4 games. So how do you think it changes when he's back? Because Johnny is someone that can play both sides. He's far more versatile. So in terms of a question for me as well, because I still can't decide between the two from the preseason videos, what I've seen, both are attacking equally well. So it's a tough question, I know, but I just want to rephrase it in a different perspective of what happens when Semedo is back, because Semedo is an equally talented player as well.
Sure. When Semedo is back, he will, of course, only be able to play on the right, and Aitnery can only play on the left. But as you said, Johnny can be right wing back or left wing back. Mm-hmm. When we had Matt Doherty, Johnny played pretty much every game at left wing back. It's his original position. I think he's better on the right, but he can very comfortably be on the left. So what I think is, I think that these three players will rotate the two positions, and I don't think any of them will be guaranteed starters at this point.
Yeah. And one more question that I've been wanting to ask you is that how often does Bruno Lage changes defense, or a few managers have certain types of style of play in terms of changing their formation often, changing their team often, like Arteta doesn't break his team unless it's needed. So does Lage constantly will be chopping and changing when there are three wing backs and two spots to fill? Your take on that?
Yeah, I think not only will we chop and change the people, I think we'll change formation. So I think we'll go to a back five whenever we play the likes of Tottenham, City, Liverpool, any of these big teams. I think we'll go to a back five. When we're playing the wing backs, I think he does rotate. I was trying last season very hard to learn his rules of how he does it and when he does it, but I could not figure it out. He played Marcel for 2 games, and then he would suddenly drop him and play Ran for 3 games, and then Marcel again. He did say that he preferred Marcel because he was more stable and controlled on the ball. But I couldn't match that to an opponent, if that makes sense. So I think he will chop and change. I just don't know when and how he will do it. He seems very random when he does that.
Yeah. Okay.
But for the time being, these two players, they're going to play. because we have no alternatives.
Yeah, and it also makes sense in the fact that we have unlimited transfers coming in, and we are at the maximum looking at 16 game weeks, and with a wild card in between. So obviously, the most stated obvious point is game week post game week 8 when there's the World Cup break happening. Oh, sorry, the first international break happening. So which means you don't have to look long term like we used to do in the previous season. So as you say, a 50-50 coin flip doesn't seems to be the best choice now. Having said that, does any of Sam or Anirudh have one of Johnny or Aitnuri in your drafts right now?
Yeah, I don't currently, but I would be interested if I thought one of them was completely nailed on. And for 4.5 million, I think the attacking potential is there. And if they can maintain that defensive stability after the first couple of weeks, I don't think I'm brave enough to go for them from the off. But if they get off to a good start defensively, and it looks like they're going to be bombing up high up the pitch, then they at 4.5 million could be really good value.
Yeah. And do you have one of them?
I don't have either of them yet, but as you would know, if you had been following our differential blog as well, I am a big advocate of Aitnuri. So he's someone who's always had the stats. So if I have to choose between the two of them, as both of them are nailed as of now, I would probably go in with Aitnuri, because he might be on set pieces as well every now and again. So that always adds to the FPL points as well.
He does. He shares set pieces. He takes some corners. He takes some free kicks from that left-hand side. It's for me, it really genuinely is a 50-50. I hate saying that, but they each have pros and cons, and neither of them, I don't like using the term nailed, because neither of them are nailed. Now, they're guaranteed to start, I think. But when Semedo's back, definitely not. But again, for 4.5 million, I think that's okay.
Yeah, I think I have Johnny. Even though I've seen Anirudh ride Aitnuri for seasons, I have my bias towards Johnny, and that's continuing this season as well. So when at a 50-50, you go with your personal bias, and my personal bias is Johnny for some reason. So so I started Johnny because I again reiterated the fact that they offer incredible value at 4.5 million. They were one of the best defenses outside the top six last season. I think 11 clean sheets, if I'm not wrong, last year. That's still a very good output for a 4.5, definitely, if they can retain the same. So yeah, I'm starting with Johnny as well. So let's see how that goes. Yeah. So the next part of what's happened is the preseason. A few teams Wolves have been one of the main teams outside the top six to have gotten this much coverage in preseason, because they have scored goals left, right, and center. There have been big wins against Besiktas and Alaves, and they scored 7 goals with the main team. So how crucial has this preseason been, Dan, for Wolves with a healthy squad, with a full preseason? How do you think it matters for Wolves going into the season?
Yeah, I think particularly for the likes of Neto and Podence and Gibbs-White, the preseason is critical. I think it's the first time we've had a full preseason with these three guys fit and in the team. So seeing them get what is that, 6-7 goals between them and 3 assists, it's really exciting. We did only play 2 games far with the full entire team, and we won 3-0 and 4-0. Again, they weren't the best opposition, but you only have to watch the games to see that we're so much more fluid in attack. We're such a different team in this formation, and with Gibbs-White in the team. So I'm quietly positive about Wolves. You'll see Jimenez, even though he played all of the games because he's been with the team for a while now, he's only got 2 goals, and one of them was a penalty. So you'll see Neto and Podence are the main guys in this team right now.
Yeah.
That's exciting for 5.5 million.
It is. And Daniel Podence is such a good player. He's so good. His problem is injury prone.
I remember that nutmeg against Kevin De Bruyne back a few years ago. We all lost our minds. If he can replicate that even once this season, I'm all in on him.
I think somebody posted today on Twitter, like, we all got him off a few seasons back just for that nutmeg that he did on PDB, and he was injured immediately after, and that was the term Puddin's paddle boat, I think. Tom from Hugo Diaz did that. Yeah, so Yeah, pretty much. But he's really exciting player. Again, it's now that Jimenez is injured, it probably increases the chances of both Neto and Podence playing together. A lot more guaranteed minutes. Dan, how do you see this? Because one is at an exuberant ownership. I think Neto's plus 20%, if I'm not wrong. And Podence is still lowly owned. And how do you see this going into game week one? Because with the high ownership comes effective ownership and all of those. Exactly. And both are pretty good. You could see both have 3 goals and 1 assist in preseason. Both have equal threat. So how do you see this? Like, as a manager yourself, would you go with the mass of going with Neto, or do you want to do something different and get in Podence? Or is that a case for getting in both as well? Because that's another interesting thought I had while noting the notes for this episode. So do you think maybe both of them could work out as well? Yeah.
Yeah, I mean, again, it depends what kind of player you are. If you're a safe player who likes to not fall far behind at the beginning to keep up with the pack, I think Neto is a no-brainer because his effective ownership is so high.
Yeah.
If you want to go a little bit more differential, Podence is a very good option. He's such a good player, like I said. He gets more shots than Neto does. He's always in and around the box. He weirdly scores headers, even though he's like 4 foot tall.
Yeah.
He's a very, very good player. And I'm not sure I would double up. I wouldn't want to advise anyone to double up. If you're someone who's playing a freemium and is looking at people like Neto and Bailey, why not do Neto and Podence? But I don't know. I'm not going to advise anyone to double up. Yeah. But if you're someone that likes to play very, very risky and likes a differential, Podence is a good option.
Yeah.
It's worth noting that Jimenez is the penalty taker. Neves takes them when Jimenez isn't fit. I'm not sure who the third penalty taker is. So if Neves is not on the field, I've seen some people say Neto, some people say Moutinho. I'm not entirely sure at this point who it is. It could be Neto.
Everyone's saying Neto is a Neto owner. That's what's happening. It's all just confirmation bias, isn't it?
Exactly. Yeah. And
we have no idea.
The chances of us getting a penalty when Neves is not on the field is so low, but it might be Neto. I just wanted to bring that up.
Yeah. Sam, from Johnny and Aitnori, I'm moving this to, do you have Neto or Podence or any of the old attacks in your team at the moment? Yeah.
I do. I have Neto. From the day that his price was announced, I knew he would be in my game week one side. He hasn't moved since. His underlying XG and XGI in his time in the Prem has been very, very strong, especially for a player of that price. And even though Wolves don't tend to score that many goals, if his XG and his XA is strong, then we've got no reason to really avoid it. For 5.5 million, I don't think you'll find many other players with those strong numbers. And sometimes I think preseason's a long old time. We've known his price for so long now. Some people are trying to overcomplicate it and trying to find a smarter way around it. Yeah. I think Late Riser said it the other day in his midfielder video. It's a gift. We should take it.
Yeah.
Exactly.
Exactly. Yeah. Anirudh, do you have Neto or Podence or
No, at the moment I don't have either of them in my draft. So I firmly believe that when you start a season in FPL, you go safe. I have made mistakes in the past by taking too many gambles and it has not worked out. So I would want to see Wolves at first in this new formation and how they're going about it. And if they are able to score more goals, then I'll probably consider him. But as of now, no, I would want to play it safe.
Yeah. Yeah.
I think Neto is a safe option because of his ownership and because of our first 6 fixtures. If you don't jump on Neto quickly, I think it's worth waiting until our bad fixture run is over, because after that first 8, we have a terrible run of fixtures. No one's going to want these guys anyway. So I think you either get on Neto from the beginning or you wait until later on in the season.
Yeah. And an interesting fact in terms of fixtures is that Wolves are the only side to play Liverpool and Man City back to back twice this season. So that's a
and last season.
Yeah, and last season. Wow. So yeah, That's a weird coincidence, but yeah. When I came across, I found it very interesting because that two fixture is going to be our top one, Wolves, and as Dan says,
Pedro Neto scored against Man City and Liverpool last season at the end of the season. So
he's a very talented player. I think he challenges for the spot in the Portuguese national team. So he would want to prove as much as possible in these in the initial few games. So do you guys think the World Cup being in the middle of the season would improve player performance, because a lot of players will be pushing for a spot in the World Cup squad? So this is something that's never happened in FPL before, because the World Cup would happen once the season is over and it'd be done before another season starts. Now this year we have a World Cup right in the middle of the season. There's also another aspect to it. Players will be a little bit more cautious of not getting injured. So it's an open question. So, but how do you see this going? Like, how much would you think World Cup impacts a player's performance in general in this season?
Yeah, so I feel as though it's not much of a difference, because normally World Cup happens in the summer. So as soon as the season completed, the players go into their international squad. So this is like having it in the middle of the season, but it's more or less same. I don't think it will have that much of an impact. From an FPL perspective, of course, there is an impact. But in terms of player performances, it's more or less going to be the same, I would suggest.
Yeah.
Sorry, go ahead.
Sorry. Yeah, I was just going to ask you. Yeah, sorry.
I think it does make a difference, if I'm honest. I think if you're going to have a World Cup in, what is it, December?
Yeah.
There's going to be players who are really going to try and perform and get in those World Cup teams, especially ones that are on the edge of the squad.
Yeah.
People like Madison, maybe. Even people like, I'm going to bring Wolves up again. Daniel Podence is on the edge of the Portugal squad.
Yeah,
absolutely.
I think they're going to want to try hard to get in these teams.
Yeah,
I think it's very player dependent as well, because there are some players that, like you mentioned a minute ago, that are probably quite safe in their World Cup selection, and going into like game week 14, 15, they might take their foot off the pedal at that little bit and give 10% less in games, where they think, I'm not getting injured now, I can't afford to. So that will be an interesting dynamic we'll have to approach when we get closer to the World Cup. But for the time being, I think you look around the peripherals of those international squads and you look for players that are going to have extra motivation for trying to break into their teams. Madison being an absolutely fantastic example. Sancho, Rashford as well. I think we shouldn't dismiss either of them. Yeah. Obviously, there are quite a few safer picks like Mount, Sterling, et cetera, but there are a number of players that are going to be highly motivated. I know Brendan Rodgers, to bring up Madison again, has been saying pre-season that he's never seen him like this before. He looks like a man possessed. So it will be really interesting to see how different dynamics form in the early weeks of the season. And I think there will be some bandwagons on these players in the in the first few game weeks.
Another English player that I would put forward here is Bowen. Considering last season's form, if the World Cup was in summer, he would have been 100% on that English squad, because Rashford and Sancho were not in form. But now he's got to prove himself again this season. And it's going to be really interesting, because the English talent is at the highest, I would say, in a long, long time in the game. So it's going to be a lot of competition for spots, especially from players who are on the edges, in and out. So it should be interesting towards that stage when the probables are around 10, they trim it from 30 to 23. Yeah, so maybe let's see how that pans out. Yeah. So before we move out of Wolves, there was this question of from Kante to Dan saying, how many goals do you think Neto realistically scores in the first six game weeks? Yeah.
Well, that's a very specific. Take a word guess.
At least eight, right?
Yeah, 20 goals in the first place. No, I think we can, against the likes of Leeds, Fulham, Bournemouth and Southampton, you'd hope Wolves get some goals, and Neto's going to be involved, you would hope. So, I don't know, three or four maybe, I think you can probably expect.
Yeah.
I'm completely guessing here, no one has any idea. I mean, if he gets one haul, if he gets one 10 plus haul in those first 3 or 4 or 5 games, I think people should be happy with a 5.5 million asset.
Absolutely. Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Yeah. I think nobody can sum up what you should expect from a 5.5 million asset like Neto than what you did right now. Yeah. That one or two 10 plus hauls from a 5.5 plus midfielder is going to be a huge boost in those initial few weeks. Let's hope Neto gets one or two for us FPL managers. Yeah. Any other? I just quickly skim through any other questions related to Wolves before we move to Saints. There's one from Trini. He says Johnny is more of a goal threat and Aitnor is more of an assist threat. So, how do you see this, Dan? Like, is that?
I would tend to agree with that. Aitnor gets a lot more crosses into the box. He's also on set pieces. Johnny's a lot more direct and he runs into the box. He arrives in the box late and tends to get more shots on goal. So it's a little bit of a blanket statement, but I do agree with it in general.
Yeah, understood. Yeah. So, yeah, I think this again, like, quickly sum up 3 players that we should target from Wolves. So, to summarize Wolves, yeah.
Yeah, I think Neto number one.
Yeah.
Number two, Johnny or Aitnori. And honestly, take your pick. From a hat.
Yeah.
And number three, Daniel Podence.
Awesome. And probably Gibbs White, if he stays and he's settled, could be an option to record in the future as well. So a lot of players in that 5.5 range should be interesting to own Wolves players this season. Yeah. So,
I will say, just finally, if Wolves do sell Morgan Gibbs White, and I hope they don't, my opinion may change completely on this whole thing, because he's integral to how we're playing right now.
Yeah, understood. Yeah, okay, all right. So, thanks, Dad. So, we move to the next team. So, we have Southampton next up. So, yeah, Sam has been a lifelong Saints fan, and there's no better person to preview Southampton than Sam. So, it's a bit of a transition like what Crystal Palace had last year when they had to clear a lot of aging players out of the squad and replace them with young talents. And that's what you guys have done this year as well. So how do you see this whole summer for you? Because it's very crucial.
Yeah, absolutely. I think transition is probably the word I'd use at the moment. Yeah. I think we were desperately in need of a little bit of a revamp. Luckily, we got new ownership coming through during the mid-season, but too late to make any real difference to our side last year. And they came with the promise that we're going to moneyball it a little bit. And if you've ever seen that movie, one of my favorites, it's a really good metaphor for what we're trying to do here. We're trying to recreate in the aggregate a quite decent squad of young players, promising players that have hopefully good resale value, because as we all know, Southampton are, at the end of the day, a bit of a selling club. And also players that are going to perform over the first few years of their professional careers. So as you can see here from the incoming transfers, I think the average age is mainly around 20 years old for most of these. There's a couple in there that are a little bit older. For example, Joe Aribo comes from Rangers. I think he's 25, possibly 24. Yeah. So a little bit older. He comes with a bit more experience. But most of the rest of these players, are certainly the starting players or the players challenging for the first team, come from the Tino Livramento mold from last year, where we're trying to pick up young talent from high-profile clubs, mainly Man City this year, and hopefully blood them into our starting 11, promise some game time, and hopefully they can fulfill on their promise early for us. Otherwise, we might be in a bit of trouble.
Yeah. I think Bazunu is one signing that I was really excited to see. He's still 18, 19. He's already saved a penalty from Cristiano Ronaldo for Ireland. He's a bit
not
of
not bad, eh?
Yeah, he played for your Derby rivals Portsmouth, and he was their player of season. And there was a lot of fun when you guys revealed him by quoting their team of the player of the season tweet. So yeah, I think in general it's an exciting summer for you guys with a lot of young talent, with the promise of making it big coming through. And also a lot more of old players moving out from their contracts. If I would ask you, what's the one signing that's got you the most excitement out of this six players that have come through?
Yeah, so it's hard to pick one, actually. What I would say is I'm excited for two in particular for very different reasons. So yeah. I'm excited for Bazunu, as you mentioned, because our goalkeeping has been such an issue for so long now. We haven't had a strong, nailed-on starting goalkeeper for years now. It's always been a battle between Forster and McCarthy, and neither of them has ever really stamped that much authority on the spot. Now, in Bazunu, we've got a keeper with a very good amount of promise. He's already an international goalkeeper, as you mentioned. His shot stopping is incredible. He's already pulled off one of the saves of the season in pre-season. I really like his command of the area. I think he is going to be a factor in our FPL teams at some point this season, just for the sheer amount of saves I expect him to have to make, because he's, at the end of the day, a Southampton goalkeeper. So if he can string together two or three clean sheets in a row, he will become a factor. But I'm just really excited to see him nail down a starting position in goal for us. The second player at the moment I'm really excited about is Sekou Mara, who obviously comes from Bordeaux. Very highly touted young French striker. I think he's in the under-19 national team for them, and he comes with high regard. I think we were quite fortunate to pick him up. There was a lot of interesting dealings going on with Bordeaux around the Mara transfer, and I think Newcastle were prying around. I think a couple of other clubs were, but they were waiting for Bordeaux to potentially go into administration and pick him up on a really bargain basement price. We honoured the price that we were quoted and potentially saved Bordeaux from administration, which is kind of fun. And in doing so, that gave us the goodwill to pick him up, and Mara was very happy to join us. So hopefully he will prove to become a starting regular at 5.5 million up front for Saints. I think if he does nail down a starting spot, 5.5 million is a very good price for him. It's just a matter of when he's going to come into the fold, when he's going to take that starting 11 spot, and hopefully he doesn't become a bit of an ongoing joke like Broya, the points dodger from last season. Hopefully he can be a little bit more prolific in front of goal in the back end of the season at 5.5.
Yeah. Do you see him coming back though? Because West Ham have got another striker. And at the moment, I don't think there's any other team that's going for Broya. Do you see a permanent deal happening there, Sam?
I would be surprised. I know we were in for him. By the looks of it, weren't willing to match the quote from Chelsea to bring him over. And also, if I'm honest, I think there was a slightly souring relationship by the end of his time at Southampton. Generally speaking, he got along really well with us. We really liked him. But by the end, I think there was a little bit of tension growing. We were becoming a little bit frustrated with his output from a backroom staff point of view. Hassan Hüttl made a few comments about him being quite hit and miss. And that will happen with young players. I'm sure that wouldn't have put us off bringing him back. But for the price that Chelsea were quoting, I think we looked around the market and thought to ourselves, we can probably find some stronger options for less. But obviously, I'd welcome him back. I just don't think it's that realistic for the prices being rumoured.
Yeah, understood. Yeah. So I'll just jump on to the next section. So, So he's one manager that's known to go all out in every single game. There's no change, even if it's a top 16. Southampton are not known to sit back. It's gone well in few cases. It has not gone well in few cases, but it's absolutely good for a team to have a single philosophy that goes into the players as well. Because if the manager is not that upfront, it doesn't bode well with the players as well. So how do you see yourself going into this new season?
Yeah, so like you say, famously, we're open for a battering every now and then, but that is the nature of our style of play. Yeah. I think, interestingly, this preseason, what we've seen from Hassan Hüttl is a little bit of a willingness to look at other formations and look at a more pragmatic approach. So that is something to keep an eye out for. I would still expect us to start the season with this 4-2-2 with the two wide cams, as you can see on screen now. I'd be surprised if we committed to going five at the back from the start. It's something we've been testing in pre-season, but the main issue with that test seems to be we can't find the back of the net using that formation whatsoever. So I would still expect us to revert back to this 4-2-2. We're playing a preseason friendly against Monaco right now, which I'm not aware of the score on, but by the looks of our lineup, we were going with a 4-2-2. So I think we're getting close enough to the season now where we're reverting back to type. We're going to be starting in this manner. And like you can see on screen here, obviously, since I made this, we've made the signing of Mara, but I would still expect him to start from the bench at least for the first couple of game weeks before cementing a spot. So what I really like about this formation in particular is that right cam role for Stuart Armstrong at 5 million, if he can stay fit for a pretty attacking cam role, he could be really good value. And like I mentioned, with that five at the back formation, Stuart Armstrong's also being tested in a striker role. So again, an out of position 5 million Stuart Armstrong, if we do start playing in that formation at any point during the season, he could be even better value. Yeah. So I really like that. I like Aribo on the left as well, if he can nail down that spot. What I would be slightly worried about is the amount of options we've got in that role. We've got quite a few players that will want minutes. So even though this would be our strongest starting 11, we'll probably see the likes of Nathan Redmond, Teller coming in as well. Elianusi, Walcott even might get a few minutes here and there. So even though that this is my favoured starting 11, I think we will likely see quite a lot of chopping and changing.
Yeah, I think that sounds ideal. But one player that I found very interesting was Aribo, because he's played all across for Rangers, right? From a cam role to a striker role, left wing, right wing. His profile on transfer market is pretty complete, because he's all across the pitch in attacking roles. So how do you see him being utilized by Ralph? Yeah, so is he going to be someone that's moved across constantly, or do you see him just fixed on that one role? Yeah,
so I think a part of the reason we wanted to sign him especially is because of that versatility. I think we will try and manufacture a pretty permanent role for him on that left, in the cam role. But I can absolutely see him being used in a central midfield role, possibly in behind the striker in some matches as well, or worst case scenario, out on the right wing as well, if we're struggling there. But I think generally speaking, we'll try and use him in his preferred left wing position, cutting inside. And hopefully he'll be a bit of a better goal threat than we've seen in recent years from that left wing. But the nature of our formation is it is very fluid. Those two cams, even though they are predetermined as a left cam and a right cam, they will move around quite a lot. They will be given quite a lot of license to roam. So he will use that versatility on a week-by-week basis, even if he is starting on that left-hand side.
Yeah, that sounds great to know. One more thing that I want to ask is that we've not touched base yet, but James Ward-Prowse is someone that's always been around the FPL radar, because he's a set piece legend. In my opinion, the best set piece taker in the Premier League currently, and he guarantees you around 140 to 150 points every year. And every year, I've seen this argument for him being an FPL asset, because at the end of the season, people see what he did the previous season, and he would have got 150 points, and 150 points for a budget asset is a great return. So I know what Sam wrote on the preview. So I'm going to pass this question to Dan and Anirudh. So Dan, how much do you see, or has Ward-Prowse as an FPL asset ever been an option for you? Yeah,
I've considered him at some points during previous seasons, but I don't think I've ever actually owned him. I'm not sure why, because he's consistently returning. He's as nailed it. People use him as the you know, the
benchmark, yeah
the benchmark for the term nailed, and it's true. He's like guaranteed to play 90 minutes every game, but for some reason he's just not that much of an exciting pick, I feel. I don't know if you see him being any different this year, Sam, or is going to be the same. He's going to just be nailed 90 minutes, sitting in that central midfield role.
Yeah, I you're completely bang on. He will get 90 minutes almost every week. And we do have a little bit more depth in centre midfield, but that won't affect him too much. He might get the odd early substitution here and there just to rest him, because in previous seasons he has started to look knackered at the back end of the year. Mm-hmm. But I think fundamentally, even though he does score 150 points a year, you never know when those returns are going to come. They're just as likely to come against Man City away from home as they are against Fulham at home. And for that reason, he's a very difficult FPL asset to actually try and hold on to. He'll go through patches of 10 game weeks in a row with nothing, and then 3 game weeks on the trot against difficult opposition where you'd never consider owning him. He'll score 3 times in a row, or get pick up an assist from a free kick, or et cetera, et cetera. So for me, unless you're willing to just hold him as your 6.5 million midfielder of choice from game week 1 through to game week 38 and just bite that bullet and wait for the returns to come, he's almost impossible to own, barring a double game week and really taking a punt on him. And that might seem strange coming from a Southampton fan. I love him to bits. He is, in my view, one of the best, if not the best, free kick or set piece taker in the world. But because his returns do come from set pieces, that is inherently completely unpredictable. And it makes it very difficult to own him as an FPL asset when there are fundamentally exciting, explosive picks who you can jump on when the fixtures are good. Martinelli, Rashford, Neto as well comes in at a lower price. These are players that you can pick looking at the fixtures and say, I know that they're probably going to get 4 or 5 returns in this 8-9 game week spread. With James Ward-Prowse, you can never say for sure whether that's going to come or not. And for that reason, he becomes a very difficult player to own.
I think there's some excellent points. And two, I think he's a great option if you're on a set and forget team, just have him in your team the whole season.
Yeah.
I also think he's often overpriced by FPL. I think being at 6.5, that puts a lot of people out. I'd have liked
at 6 million, it's a conversation.
Oh, is it 6 million? Oh, yeah. Right.
No, at 6 million, it would be a conversation.
Oh, okay, yeah. I would like to see him even 5 million, 5.5 to really make people think about picking him.
He'd be in my squad at 5.5.
Yeah.
I can tell you that right now. At 5.5, he's nailed on my squad.
Yeah, I really think they should have done that to make it more exciting. Because at 6.5, I don't think anyone's going to be picking him for the reason people are.
Yeah, I think that's, the one thing that managers keep forgetting is that it's not a nailed spot, because people go on to compare with a Trent or someone like, say, 200 points. But the fact is that that spot could be rotated, as Sam said. Like, that could be 3 different players with the fixture swing there who could probably get you 80, 90 points for that particular stretch. And then you move on, probably 3-4 transfers for that particular 6.5 midfield slot, you can go around to get, say, 250, 270 points from that particular slot instead of holding James Ward-Prowse throughout the season. You probably get 140 points, something that gets missed in the preseason. Because, as I said, people look at how much points that player has scored in the past, and then they expect the same to continue in the next season. That's not the case. But nothing against Ward-Prowse. He's also really great player for Southampton as well as an ambassador for the Premier League. But yeah, just in terms of speaking sense from an FPL perspective.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Anil, do you want to add any thoughts on this of that 6.5 midfield slot?
So Ward-Prowse is someone like a Milivojevic was for Crystal Palace a few years back. Like, you know he's going to get you at least 12 to 14 goal contributions, but you'd never go for him because he's not a fancy pick. You'd rather go for someone like Neto, even if he's priced at the same price as Ward-Prowse, because he looks more fancy. It's a boring pick. So if you want to be a boring FPL manager, I think you should pick Ward-Prowse because he will get the returns.
Anil is throwing a bit of banter here. Yeah, I think making a little bit of fun. When you have Rashford at 6.5 million, obviously, it's more exciting to see a winger cutting through rather than watching every single set piece expecting it to go in and maybe it doesn't go in. Yeah, so it's a different kind of fun. Yeah, totally.
He's an exceptional player, though. I think we can all agree about that.
Yeah,
I love him.
100%. Probably the best set piece taker I've ever seen.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I'd go with that.
If he played for like a top six team or a team in Europe, I think there'd be no doubt people would be saying he's the best free kick taker in the world.
100%.
100%. Agree. Yeah. A little bit touch basing on the preseason. I think the problem is seen here. There's a lack of goals. Sam is nodding his head without any option. But yeah. But how I've not watched, to be honest, I've not watched a lot of the preseason fully, at least for the Saints fixtures. But how has it gone, Sam, in terms of the team gelling together? Do you see it coming out well? Because the fixtures are not obviously good to go all out on Southampton at the beginning. But we have another 3-4 game weeks to see how the team goes. But so far, how's the preseason been for Southampton? Yeah.
Yeah, so like I say, we've been trying out this new formation that would give us a bit more stability at the back. We want to prevent those pummelings where we can this season, I think. And we've made a real concerted effort to try and reduce the goals conceded. That has been one positive from pre-season. I know we lost 3-1 to Leipzig, but in the half that we were playing with Bazunu in goal, I think it was a clean sheet and we looked very solid at the back. I'd expect that to continue. And against Watford as well, it didn't look like we were going to concede for about 3 or 4 hours if we kept playing. So the early signs defensively are good. It's just whether or not we persevere with that formation. Today, I noticed in the chat, it's been mentioned that Southampton 0-0 after 15 minutes against Monaco. I'll be checking that throughout the show as well to see if that changes, but I think we're playing with four at the back, so it would be interesting to see how we do defensively in this preseason match and in our final one later next week as well. Where we've been struggling is going forward, so goals have dried up with this new formation. Obviously Adam Armstrong being the only goal scorer so far isn't that great. I would be slightly worried about that. I think from an FPL point of view, like you mentioned, the first 5 game weeks, we're just not going to have any realistic interest in Southampton assets. So it gives us that opportunity to look at how we're playing, whether or not we do trial this new formation in those first 5 game weeks. And then by the time the fixtures turn ahead of game week 6, we've had that good amount of time to really evaluate whether or not there are any attacking options of interest, whether or not we have reverted back to that 4-2-2, or whether indeed we are still struggling to score goals. In terms of team cohesion, I think there are good early signs. All of the new players, all the new signings seem to be settling in really well. So I have no concerns there as of yet. Obviously, Sekou Mara hasn't had the opportunity to play yet, and we'll probably see him in the next couple of matches. But like I say, we've got 5 game weeks to have a look at them. And then ahead of game week 6, I think our fixtures turn, at which point some of these really cheap assets like Stuart Armstrong, like Joe Aribo on the left, and potentially even like Carl Walker-Peters as well might become slightly interesting. And we should know more about how we line up at that point.
Yeah. So that's a fair... That sounds confident when you start looking at Saints from game week 6. That's when, interestingly, it's a game against Wolves and the FPRs too. I'm not sure Dan would agree to that. But
not an easy game. Not an easy game
for neither team.
No, exactly.
But then 5 games should give us a fair bit of a perspective of which players should be in our FPL radar. You touch base upon Kyle Walker-Peters towards the end. And I would like to go to Anirudh because he knows he's been a strong advocate of him. And moreover, KWP has been a bonus point magnet because he rakes up BPS score. And whenever there's a clean sheet, he gets those 3. So do you think that having a 4.5 defender with the prospect of BPS, doing well in BPS, because the bonus, it's always seen with the bigger premium options. You take bonus into consideration only when you go for players in the premium bracket. You don't look at budget picks who could do well in the BPS aspect as well. So do you think a player like Kyle Walker-Peters, who always does well because he's an attacking fullback, makes him an interesting case from a BPS perspective? Yeah,
for me, I've always backed Kyle Walker-Peters, and last season I think if I'm not wrong, he created 6 big chances as well. So, which is among the highest among defenders in the bottom of the table. So he, like you said, is a bonus magnet, and Sam was touching upon Bazunu's arrival, and that is something that gives me even more encouragement to go with Walker-Peters, because I've seen Southampton as a team which has good structure, but in goal, they've always lacked something. So they've been up and down, and chopping and changing of goalkeepers affects the structure of the team. So now that they have a goalkeeper who they can rely upon, I think the rest of the defense becomes that much more enterprising. And Walker-Peters, as he showed against Man City as well last season, he can come up trumps anytime. And like I said, he's created a lot of big chances. Apart from that, he makes a lot of tackles, which makes him a bonus point magnet. So from game week 6 onwards, I guess we should seriously look at him from an FPL perspective.
Interesting, yeah. Because this was something when I thought we were going to talk about Saints today, this is the first question that I wanted to put it on my notes, because I've always seen, because last year there was a fixture, it was a Friday night game, and it was a free hit period, and a few managers put Livramento and a few put Walker-Peters. One ended up getting 6 and the other ended up getting 9. So I had that as a strong memory. Basically, my input or my insight from what I've planned for this preseason is that when you look at a 4.5 defender or any asset that's not traditionally known to do well compared to the premium picks, bonus is another area that you can add to evaluate their overall points return as well. So, yeah, before we move out of Southampton, just a general question, since there's unlimited transfers waiting for us when the break happens. Where do you guys see playing the first wild card? Yeah. Anyone?
Yeah. I'll go. So I'm currently looking at game week 6 to 8, probably game week 8 because it's the international break. I like my planning. So just from a selfish point of view, having that international break to plan in the transfers is something that I really like doing, and properly analyzing the first 8 weeks in isolation. I'm very realistic that anywhere between 5 and 8, I could easily pull the wild card if things haven't started off nicely for me. I'm also eyeing up a planned wild card around that time as well, just before the international break. I'm just having a look at the structure and to see about the fixture swings, whether or not that might work. I think one thing nobody's thinking of doing at the moment is wildcarding any later than game week 10, because then you lose the benefit of it with the unlimited free transfers coming in 16. So yeah, I think jumping on a good fixture run, there is a nice fixture turn around game week 6 for a lot of clubs. Obviously, Wolves fixtures turn, I think, in game week 7. So anyone on Neto or Johnny might want to hop off. Meanwhile, you're also getting good fixture runs coming in from the likes of Nottingham Forest, Fulham, teams, and Bournemouth even, all the promoted teams, in fact, where previously we're not that interested in them. However, they do have talismanic figures in each of those clubs at low prices that if they start the season well, going into that fixture turn, they could be very, very good, cheap value picks going in on the wild card that could differentiate yourself from the pack.
Yeah. So, Dan, I'll move to you. So, as Sam touched base, Wolves fixtures turn the opposite starting game week 6. So, is there any planning that you've had, or where do you see yourself playing the wild card?
Yeah. Yeah, I haven't thought too much about it at this point. Ideally, I'd like to play it around the international break, but I am definitely not against going early if it makes sense. I think it's important to be flexible and be able to adapt to any kind of changes.
Yeah.
So while I have in the back of my mind, sometime around game week 8, game week 7, I'm definitely not opposed to going a few game weeks earlier.
Yeah.
I've even seen some people wanting to take a wild card 3 or 4 and really attack those first 2 or 3 game weeks with differentials. I highly doubt I would do that.
Yeah.
But it's an interesting option.
Yeah, but it certainly is, because the previous season you had to prepare a game week one squad for a very long period, because you had only one wild card. Now with this thing, there's a lot of managers that I'm not sure how many will end up doing it, but at least the talk of the town has been trying to attack those initial 3-4 weeks, wild card out earlier, and then like push it for another 10 to 12 game weeks before you get the unlimited transfer. Certainly, going with the template could be different this year, because you might have the early chance to correct yourself, even if you go a bit different here. Anirudh has said earlier that he doesn't want to go differential this time, wants to play it safe. So I'm moving to him to see where he has an idea of playing a wild card. Yeah.
So I am thinking about the end of the transfer market, because usually international break coincides with the end of the transfer market. So that's when we use our wild cards because of the changes in squads that happen. So this time as well, around game week 6, I would probably be looking to play my wild card again.
Yeah, makes sense. Yeah. All right, so we are, I think, a little bit over on time. So I'm moving on to Sam to conclude Southampton, to see three players to target once the fixtures become good for Southampton. Yeah.
Yeah, I would probably put Stuart Armstrong at the top at 5 million. I think that is a very, very good value if he stays fit. Secondly, I don't think you can ever fully disregard James Ward-Prowse, even though, as we mentioned, he's not someone I would personally be picking unless doubles came for him. I think he is a solid option that will get you points over a season if you're a conservative manager. So he's definitely an option. And third, I would probably go with Kyle Walker-Peters, like you've already mentioned. He is a bonus point magnet if we can keep clean sheets, and he is trying to add attacking returns to his game, especially last season going into this year. So I think it will be a big year for him as well.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah. So sorry for making you wait, but it's finally time for Chelsea. Yeah. So Chelsea have been going through a lot in the last 6 months. There's been change in ownership. There's a lot. I don't have to introduce much on that regard. But it's a big summer in terms of what's happened transfer-wise, what's happened ownership-wise. But the early signs of that, the owners are really into making this club reach even better heights. So how's the transfer window so far for Chelsea? Yeah.
Well, to sum it up in one word, probably transfer window is hijacked by Barcelona. So, yeah, that's what I would say. But, I mean, it's been a bit of a roller coaster for us ever since the war happened and all the change in ownership. And it's been a bit of a mess. A lot of players want to leave. We are not allowing players to leave because we're not able to sign replacements. The replacements we look for are getting hijacked. And the players, some of the other players are going to some other teams. It's really a bit of a mess. And the player that we signed, we actually don't know why we signed in the first place, in Raheem Sterling, because we have way too many attackers. And although he's a good player, again, player did we need? We don't know. But Koulibaly is obviously a good addition. That's the only positive that's been in the transfer market. Apart from that, it's all been gloomy, to be honest.
Yeah, so that I'll just, we'll touch base on that a little bit later, of how that transfer window will impact Chelsea assets, because a lot of interest has been on even double Chelsea defense, with Mendy coming in at just 5 million. And of course, one of James and Chilwell has been a template amongst managers. We'll touch base upon that a little later. There's also a lot of rumors that there'll be change in formation. You guys tried that and you guys reverted in the only against Arsenal. So do you really see three at the back being ditched by Tuchel this season, or at least to begin with? Maybe four-man defense. Will it be the way to go for Chelsea?
I don't think so at all, because I definitely think the season we will start with a back three. Maybe as the season progresses against some weaker opposition, we might experiment with a back four. Largely, I think we'll stick to a back three, because the players, personnel that we have, the centre-backs and the midfield as well. So it does not really suit for us to play a back four as it stands, at least. Maybe if we can add on a few players, then things might change. But as it stands with the current squad we have, I really don't see us playing a back four.
Yeah. So even if there is a time wherein four-man defense is the way to go, how much would a difference in that formation change affect Reece James and Chilwell? Yeah. Because...
No, I don't think it will make much of a difference because they're going to be attacking fullbacks for sure. They are going to get attacking returns regardless of whether we play a back four or a back five. Because if we see, we have wingers like, for example, Raheem Sterling. He probably would play on the left and Pulisic might play on the right. So these players would probably cut in and give the space for Reece and Chilwell to overlap. So I guess it won't make that much of a difference.
Yeah, interesting. Interesting. One more thing is that Chilwell is always known to be a great player on the overlap. He's always the player that's on the far post often, which gives Reece James chance to cross. So long may that continue from an FPL perspective. Yeah. So Chelsea's fixture. So how do you see Chelsea's fixture? Because it's a mixed bag, to be honest. It's not all great. So,
So it is a bit of a mixed bag. I know the first fixture says 2 in the FTR, but Goodison's probably been a bit of a help for us in the past. So when I look at the fixture and when I looked at Everton away, I was like, oh shit, again, here we go again. That was the impression I got. So I don't really take that as a 2, but Spurs is going to be a difficult fixture as well because they are in cracking form in preseason and probably had the best transfer window apart from Barcelona, but I don't want to talk about Barcelona. So, yeah. So, and even beyond that as well. In fact, all the way up until game week 8, it's a bit of a mixed bag. So, after that, it becomes a little easier. So, until game week 8, it's a little trickier.
Yeah. Sam, I'll move on to you. So, how fixtures sometimes go out of the equation when you talk about big six assets. Say, for example, Reece James, for instance. You pick them regardless of the fixture. But still, there's something that you have to consider because Spurs is not going to be an easy game at any cost for Chelsea in game week 2. So, how do you see how much of that has impacted you? Like, what's your thoughts on Chelsea assets? How many do you have in your team? Yeah,
it's an interesting one with Chelsea this season because, like you mentioned, I think they have had quite a tumultuous summer, and it doesn't sound like Tuchel's too happy with the effort that some of the players are putting in at the moment. I think there are a core of players now that are looking to move on, and until they either sort that out or go, then that's going to be an ongoing issue. I think when the prices were first announced, Mendy at 5 million seemed like the ultimate opportunity for a Chelsea double up in defence. So Mendy with either James or Chilwell. However, at this point now, and looking at the fixtures really in depth, so on paper, as you mentioned, it looks really good. There's a lot of green there. But when you really analyse the fixtures, Tottenham, I don't expect a clean sheet. Leeds are pretty potent going forward. Leicester, I'd expect to score. Southampton, no comment. And West Ham, I'd probably expect to give them a good run for their money as well. So defensively, if we're just looking from a clean sheet point of view, I'm not sure how many we're actually going to realistically expect from those first 8 game weeks. However, I do have James in my team. I wouldn't have any problem with switching that to Chilwell either. They're pretty interchangeable in my mind as far as this argument goes. Their potential for attacking returns nullifies the fact that I don't think they'll keep too many clean sheets. If James is on the end of any assists or any goals, he is a bonus point monster even without that clean sheet. So big attacking big returns are going to come from one of those wing backs. I would personally be backing James, whereas Chilwell, I don't mind either at all. I probably wouldn't go with both, especially considering the preseason they've had. Although, if you want to be brave with it and you think the attacking returns are going to come from both sides, then that is a way to have a look at differentiating yourself. I'm a little bit more conservative, though, and I'll probably be just going with the one Chelsea player to start the season and wait and see.
Yeah. Moving on, a question to Dan. As in, Dan, do you see Mendy as an FPL option? Because he was definitely a great option when the prices came in, as Sam pointed out. But as the days tick closer to the season starting, and considering the difference is not much settled at the moment, there's talks of another centre-back coming in. How confident would you say about Mendy as an option to go forward?
Yeah. I echo the thoughts of Sam. When the prices were first announced, I was really excited about Chelsea. I actually had both Chilwell and James in my draft, and I was even tempted to triple up with Mendy. I was that confident after the fixtures and the prices. But now I'm at the point where I might not even have any. It's just been a very, very turbulent off-season.
Yeah.
Tuchel's comments that he's been making lately have been a little worrying. There seems to be some issues behind the scenes there as well.
Yeah.
So he's a good option at 5, I think, but I think I would prefer to downgrade for a 4.5 to use that 0.5 elsewhere, or to even upgrade to the likes of Ederson, who are a much more better defensive team, I think, than Chelsea. So
yeah,
I don't think he's a bad asset, but I think there's better value elsewhere.
Yeah, understood, understood. Last question, like, how many Chelsea assets do you have on it in your team? I hope it's 3.
Okay, so it is 0.
Yeah, oh,
wow.
Yeah, so yeah. I mean, we are in a bit of a mess, so there are other teams who are in much better stable position to look at. So I would say probably it's not a good idea to take Chelsea players, but if you're really desperate for one, Mason Mount is the one that you should go to.
I like that as a pick.
Yeah, Sam, isn't that interesting? Because we had a talk about a boring FPL pick. Mount is someone that sticked along all season last year, but still was not actively being used by the FPL community, at least. He had ownerships of 20-25% in general, but somehow none of the active FPL managers engage with Mount as an FPL asset, because I really don't know, because even at the Havertz game week, Mount seemed to be the logical option, but still people went Havertz, and Mount ended up getting 24 points, and there's a whole history. What's your thoughts on Mount as an FPL option? Because he seems to constantly get points, but still miss out. Yeah,
yeah. I was fortunate in that I went with Mount, captained him on that game. Not captained him. I went with Mount. I captained Salah. Both got hat-tricks that game week in the infamous week where Havertz blanked. So I'm a big fan of Mount. And I think he's a victim of like lazy opinions, I think, from maybe past seasons where he used to be more of a ball carrier rather than a direct goal threat. I think his game's changed massively. You might disagree, but looking at his underlying statistics, they're really, really strong in terms of goal threat and assist threat. And I personally think the only reason we're not really seeing him in too many teams at the start of this season is that he's a bit of a victim of the pricing, in that there are options at 8 million, like Luis Diaz, for instance, that fit into a structure in a much more convenient way. At the moment with Liverpool, most people are going with 3 Liverpool assets, and it's a straight battle between Robbo or Diaz. A lot of people are struggling to get Trent and Robbo into that back line alongside the likes of Cancelo and maybe a Chelsea defender. So what they're doing is putting in that third Liverpool asset as Diaz, which means there's not really that much space for another 8 million midfielder. Yeah. I think if there was space for another 8 million midfielder, Mount would probably be the go-to guy. He is probably the most nailed on of those 8 million options. His attacking numbers are really, really strong. And even though I wouldn't back Chelsea from a defensive point of view necessarily in these first few weeks, there's plenty of goals on offer in these fixtures. And I think if you can jump on the right Chelsea asset, and let's face it, there's not many better than Mount, he will get returns in those first 7 game weeks.
Yeah, that's an interesting case, because one of the lessons that I learned from last season is that take Mount into FPL consideration throughout the next season, because after seeing what he did last year and being a fool of not considering all through the season. Yeah, he should tick along. And personally, I had 2 Chelsea defenders that became 1. And now I'm questioning if I have to have 1 and probably switch Diaz to Mount. So I'm not sure how much I'll be owning as well, but it doesn't like make a strong case for a double up or maybe even a triple up of Chelsea assets. Yeah. I think I missed the slide for preseason, but it was 1 win.
I'm glad you missed.
Yeah. I think I missed that slide. Yeah. So, would you want to sum up of what happened in preseason? Yeah.
Okay. So, I would say the less said, the better. So, we've not had a good preseason, let's put it that way. And it was topped off by this miserable performance against Arsenal, where neither back three nor back four worked. So, yeah, so as we had discussed, we are in a bit of a mess. Hopefully, the remaining preseason fixture this weekend, we can do better. We did, although, get a win in which, surprise, surprise, Mason Mount ended up scoring the winning goal. So, in a 2-1 win, that's probably the only good thing that we've had up from preseason. But over the years, Chelsea has been the kind of side which has really not used preseason at all. So,
yeah,
it's just to get training to the legs of the players and people getting back to fitness. I would say to touch upon some of the positives as well. It's the first preseason someone like a Kai Havertz has had at Chelsea, and indeed Thiago Silva as well. So these are a couple of positives that I could touch upon. And Ben Chilwell, after coming back from a horrific injury, has had a proper preseason. That helps as well. So there are some positives, and I hope as the season starts, we start to perform better. That the only way is up. Let's put it that way.
Yeah. So the final question before we wrap up, this is something that I wanted to talk with all three of you. The one is that there's always been a bias towards preseason asserts, the players that do well in preseason. Of course, it worked in the players that did well last year, like Benrahma, Antonio. They were banking goals in preseason and they start doing well again when the game started as well. But how much do you think? So do you think a good preseason is a must to have a strong start to a season? Because previously in the past, players that didn't play preseason still went on to have a good, strong start. So how much would you factor in a player's performance in preseason when you make an FPL decision? I'll go to Dan first.
Yeah, I wouldn't say it's a must, but I'd say it certainly helps. If you see an asset who's just banging in the goals and getting a bunch of assists and looks really on form and confident and fully fit, it definitely factors in for me. I mean, I was someone, like many people, who jumped on Benrahma and Antonio last season because of their great preseason, and that turned out to be a good decision.
Yeah.
So it's not a guarantee, of course, but I think it factors in. Yeah. That's why I'm looking at people like Maddison even this season, because of how good he's looked off season. Like Sam said, the comments that Brendan Rodgers made, he's definitely in my mind because of that. So I think it influences my decisions for sure.
I think, that's this person called FPL Geezer. He's a Leicester fan. He told me the same thing as well when we were having a chat. Maddison is someone that every of the FPL community is sleeping on, but he's someone that is very patriotic and he wants to be in that English squad that hosts the World Cup. So interesting point there. Sam, how do you factor in preseason in your FPL this year?
Yeah, so I like I've hinted at earlier, I think, in the show, I'm quite a conservative manager from the off. But what I do like to do with preseason is pad out the peripheral areas of my squad. So last season, I was a game week one adopter of Benrahma and Antonio. And because they didn't come in at a high budget and they weren't fundamentally forming like the highest expected points players in my squad, I didn't mind taking a punt on one or two players. And when I say a punt, I'm not worried about minutes. I'm pretty sure they're going to be getting 70, 80 minutes minimum. What I'm worried about is whether or not they can continue that preseason form. So I would never rate taking a chance on a player starting or not and making that the question. If I'm first sure that they're in the strongest 11 and they look good in preseason, I don't mind taking a chance on them. This season, for instance, I think Neto is a great example of that. He is a bandwagon in preseason. He's looked fantastic in preseason, but I'm also very, very sure he's going to be starting for the first four or five game weeks. So I'm not booking in a transfer, even if he doesn't score in the first couple, because he's only 5.5 million. I can keep him in my squad as long as he's still starting. So the reason I'm on someone like him rather than Bailey is that all it takes is one bad match from Bailey and he's probably not in the starting 11 the following week. Neto, I would say it would take five or six game weeks of poor play before he gets benched. Obviously, Dan might say I'm wrong there, but I think generally I don't like taking too many risks on minutes. I don't mind taking a risk or two in terms of like attacking explosive form. So again, I wouldn't take big risks on like the premium assets, but when you're looking at the budget, 10th or 11th people in your squads, that's where I don't mind taking a bit of a chance.
Yeah, that's probably a very good summary of on this particular topic. Before we wrap up, just one more point that I want to talk about is Havertz. We saw the negative side of what happened last year, but he's now moved up in position. So how does that factor in, Anirudh, when you take Havertz as an FPL asset? Because now he's not amongst that crowded midfield spot. He's moved a little bit up. How much of that makes a change in him as an FPL asset?
It does make a change because now that he's clear that he's the main man up front, last season throughout, although he played as a forward plenty of games, there was always the thought in the back of his mind that there's Lukaku waiting in the wings if he gets back to form again. So we did see that briefly in a period of 1 to 2 months between March during the Champions League knockouts, when Havertz consistently played as the striker for us in probably 6-7 weeks. He was able to score 7 to 8 goals in 10 matches. So he can do it when he plays up front, although we haven't seen it consistently. So it is a wait and watch for me, but he has the potential to be the player who can score 10 to 15 goals easily in the league, I would say. So as of now, it's a wait and watch, but it's an intriguing proposition. And especially with Raheem Sterling coming in as well, he's someone that a lot of opposition defenders would want to concentrate on. That would probably leave the door empty for someone like a Havertz, who likes to arrive late in the box to get on the end of chances. So it's a wait and watch, but it is intriguing for sure.
Yeah, awesome. Yeah, so before we wrap up, I just quickly look through the comments for any questions that you have had. There's one for Sam. I'll just show this on screen. So, yeah, so it's NATO's fixtures turn bad after game week 6.
Mm-hmm.
Saints, it turns good. So does someone like NATO to Aribo at the 5.3 slot show promise?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, if Aribo's looking good, if he looks nailed in that side, we might even be able to get him for 5.4 if we're lucky. If a few people took a punt on him early and he hasn't scored or assisted yet, we might get away with getting him on the cheap as well. That fixture turn is strong for us. So, yeah, I don't hate that move at all. I'd also, like I mentioned earlier, keep an eye on Stuart Armstrong at 5. Neto has fallen in price for whatever reason and you can't afford a 5.5 replacement like Aribo, by that point, maybe Stuart Armstrong at 5 could be an alternative as well. But yeah, for sure, I don't mind that switch at all.
Yeah, perfect. Yeah, I think we covered a lot of other Wolves questions whenever we spoke about Wolves. So Dan is a happy man and he's not going to answer. I have to answer a few more Wolves questions. But yeah, it is great catching up with all three of you. It's a pleasure to have all three. It's still early days for us in terms of YouTube. Of course, we are known elsewhere, but thanks for considering and jumping in for this episode. For all the viewers and for all the listeners later, you can follow Dan at FPL Black Wolf. He's also known for a lot of great work in the community, for being founder of FPL USA. He runs the FPL USA leagues. You'd probably see him in a live stream tomorrow or day after as well. He's a popular on-demand man. So do give him a follow. Sam goes by FPL Pricey on Twitter and Instagram. He's been doing a lot of videos on Instagram as well. Do give him a follow. So he's a big Saints fan and a really good friend of the website and a personal friend of mine as well. Anirudh, he's probably been here as much as all of FPL has been here. So he's been a main integral part of the writing side. Yeah, he's someone that's not, don't have a social profile on Twitter, but still, he goes by KCanada on Twitter. You can follow him. And he, of course, has access to all the comments and messages at All About FPL as well. Once again, really, really thanks for taking your time in your busy days in different time zones to come in. It is a pleasure for me. And I hope it was a fun experience for you three as well. Yeah.
Absolutely was. Thank you.